Welcome to the instruction period. Let's begin by a few minutes of sitting together rather quietly, taking up the instruction we did yesterday, breathing in, calming the body, breathing out, calming the body. So over the days, there'll be a number of different instructions. But at any time, you can simply come back to the simplicity of mindfulness of breathing. So simply breathing in, tracking the breath as you go, and then breathing out. Someone asked me how you could do all that at once. we can have a broad awareness. We can have a broad awareness, but essentially we feel the touch of the breath and we track the breath all the way in. So we're really only doing one thing at a time, one sensation at a time. And then we feel the turn of the breath and then we just notice the exhalation. Or we can do what we just did then, which was we deliberately use the breath to bring calm to the body. And of course, when we're calm, we're not agitated. When we're calm, we're not distressed. So this is a really precious instruction. It's a really wonderful instruction because we can learn to bring a sense of calmness to the body. And when the body is calm, of course, it affects the mind. And the mind becomes more settled and more calm. So today, we come to the second foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of feeling. Now, the Pali word is vedana, and it means something quite specific. I mentioned this last night. It means the feeling tone of all that comes through the senses. So it's the immediate feeling tone we have that's associated with a sight, a sound, a smell, a touch, or a thought. It comes really, really quickly. And for different people, have different responses. So if I say the word coffee, what's the feeling tone? Pleasant or unpleasant or in between? Anyone think it's pleasant? Yes. Unpleasant? No one thinks coffee's unpleasant. Wow. Must be in Israel. Okay. And some people are rather neutral about it. They don't drink coffee. They don't care. Yes. Oh, they don't hear at the back? We'll turn it up. Can you hear now? Okay. So there are different responses to a single thing, such as coffee. And the same with everything, in fact. So if I said mango, or if I said mother, or whoa, yes, or father, there's not only a feeling tone of pleasant or unpleasant or in between, but it rather quickly comes with a whole narrative, a whole history of our experience and our relationship. And so the mind adds to the feeling tone of the experience, our attractions and aversions, our likes and our dislikes. And in seconds, we can be into catastrophic and dramatic thinking. Somebody once said, "My retreat was fantastic until you said the word father." Why did you do that? So you see, just with an idea or a thought or a memory, we have an association. We have a whole story that immediately comes. And with that comes our whole emotional world. So the Vedana is the initial feeling tone, which is pleasant, unpleasant, or in between. And if we learn to catch that, if we learn to see that, we can be rather steady with it. And then we're free to act in a way that isn't compelled by our aversions or attractions. This is one of the places we can discover great freedom of heart and mind, when we can just be rather steady with our the feeling tone, so the pleasant, unpleasant, and in between, on top of that, we add our likes and dislikes. When we like something, we go towards it. When we don't, we push it away. When it's neutral, we ignore it, or we disengage, or we're bored. So we have to understand this process of mind is happening during all of our waking moments. What we do is we add the self construct to that. We add I, me, and mine. We say, these are my feelings. It's that process we need to see. So the process itself is actually impersonal. It happens because we were born. Because we have senses and we're conscious human beings, we're feeling. We have feelings. It's not just you who has the feelings. We tend to personalize them and claim them as mine. And therefore, we get into lots of difficulty and trouble. So the first thing to understand is that the feeling tone of experience is that initial response that's rather automatic and fast and quick. Our emotions are constructed by adding to the feeling tone of the experience memory, imagination, past experience. Our fear of the future, for example, is constructed. We have the initial feeling tone of experience, which is not the fear itself, but we add to that our projections, our anxieties, based on perhaps memory from the past or a trauma from the past, we then project into the future. We have to understand and see this mechanism of mind and have the capacity to relate to it wisely with wisdom. So we see that this is simply happening. It's not me, not mine, not who I am. And once we see it like this, it lifts the burden of life. So if we can look and see in this way and be rather steady with the feeling tone of experience, life and consciousness opens out. Now, that doesn't mean that we're in some kind of bland state where we don't feel anything. Of course we do. We have the whole range of feelings, but it's, can we be with the feeling world with freedom rather than be compelled by the feelings that we experience? When we're compelled, consciousness is thrown about. It's like a roller coaster. If feeling happy depends on how somebody speaks to us, for example, or how someone acts today, if our happiness is dependent upon that, life becomes very uncertain. We are dependent on something outer, and of course we have a habit of mind as human beings which is very destructive, which is to look to the outer circumstances for our happiness. So in our meditation practice, we are asked to cultivate joy and contentment. And the specific instruction in this section of the Anapanasati Sutta is, the first one, is the deliberate cultivation of joy. The reason for this is that joy is one of the factors of awakening. So we need to touch into joy, we need to know joy in order to awaken. In fact, when the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree on the night of his awakening, it was a memory that he had of beautiful and wonderful joy that he experienced as a child that sparked and triggered his awakening. Reflecting on his childhood, he thought, perhaps there's an unproblematic joy. He remembered being under the rose apple tree and watching people working in the field and being just filled with extraordinary joy. And of course, many of us have had these experiences. We've been watching a sunset or seeing the stars at night or just sitting somewhere quietly, and we've been filled with joy. And the Buddha reflected and thought, this joy is unproblematic, because at the time, of course, he was practicing lots of austerities, very harsh practices of not eating and starving himself, quite extreme practices. And he suddenly thought, perhaps joy is unproblematic. And with that thought began his whole insightful, extraordinary awakening on that night. So, what I often meet, and particularly here, I have to say, in Israel, is an objection to practicing joy. I've never quite understood why, but it's like, don't tell me what to feel. Or if we are training the mind to joy, aren't we ignoring everything else? No, we are not. There are many practices where we are exploring our pain and we're facing our fears and we're being with the difficult emotions. But in this particular exercise, we're deliberately asked to cultivate a joy, to touch into a joy that is a resting place of the heart. That is a place that we can come to know, if you like, that we can touch into, where we can have a sense of joy and peace no matter what is going on in the external world. So we're looking at knowing for ourselves a joy that is not dependent upon the conditions around. So let's give it a try. Sometimes when we set the intention to experience joy and then just breathe and wait, we have some very fine light sensations like tickling on the skin. This is the beginning of joy. And many of you will have had that when you've been sitting. But you sit and you feel tingling in the body or tickling on the skin. And then if you can just stay present with that without grasping it and going, oh, I like that. If we can stay present and rather steady, that sensation can be developed and we can have very powerful and extraordinary experiences of the joy of simply breathing. So let's just try it together and see what happens. The instruction is, and I set the intention and say the instruction, and then we just do it together. Breathing in, experiencing joy. Breathing out, experiencing joy. Now, did anyone here have a direct experience of joy, even for a moment? Anybody? Yes. If you could say, pure joy. So sometimes it's possible just to breathe in and breathe out, and there's an experience of pure joy. It's wonderful. Anyone else? Even for a moment. Yes. Sorry? Oh, she felt her heart. Oh, like a cuddle. Beautiful. Okay, so felt the kind of warmth of one's heart as if one would cuddle oneself. Beautiful. So sometimes there can be these rather precious feelings. And when we just experience that, our problems cease. The difficulty has ended. So when there's pure joy, what happens to the self? No, not much self. When we really laugh, the self subsides, doesn't it? We're not caught up in our story when we're really, really laughing, for example. So when there's extraordinary, pure joy, or this beautiful sense of a cuddle, the self, the I, the me, and the whole catastrophic story tends to subside. It's no longer in the forefront of consciousness. It's no longer dominating. It feels a little lighter. We can let it go. So this is how the joy begins to free the heart and mind. The joy is liberating. To cultivate joy is a practice that frees the heart and mind. And we can see it in just a few minutes together. It may not be your experience, but you can learn by listening to another. And then you can set the intention and rather patiently practice. It does take some patience if joy is something that is difficult for you to access. Then it will take a little bit of patience, and the instructions are not just to be done once. This is why it's called meditation practice, because we actually need to do them over and over again. Because sometimes people go, oh, well, yes, I did that instruction last week. But it's to take the instructions into your daily life and explore for yourself and to see, oh, can I just, in a few moments, sitting quietly on a bench outside or even in your daily life, if you're a passenger in a car, can you just close your eyes and can you access joy? Perhaps. Not while you're driving, though. Okay. Yes. We simply wait for the breath to touch us. And when we are rather still and quiet within, what we feel is there's an aspect of the breath that's incredibly pleasant. And it's as if the breath is just washes over us and through us. And it can be a beautiful feeling. And with that can come joy. So we're not chasing after it. Whenever we try to kind of push into it or lean towards it, it disappears. whenever we try to grasp it or hold it, it also disappears. So it's about discovering how to be rather still within, and then sensitive, and just waiting, and with the actual breath, feeling the pleasantness of it. Yes. Yeah. There's different words for joy. This particular word that's used in the sutta, in Pali, it's pitti, so P-I-T-I, and it actually means that energetic kind of feeling of joy that's a little bit excitable through the body. But then, as you'll see when we go on to the next instruction, that sense of joy can be rather refined until it becomes contentment or a sense of fulfillment. It's a quieter kind of joy, which I would call happiness. So in Pali, piti is the more excitable kind of joy, and sukha, the word sukha, means this more deep contentment or the sense of fulfillment. Yes. She said, when we try to practice joy, is it actually a thought? With these instructions, we set an intention. And the intention is breathing in, experiencing joy, breathing out, experiencing joy. So the intention usually forms for people as a thought. But we can have a very subtle intention, which is just a kind of knowing what we're about to do. But when I say the intention in the words, you probably hear it, and it settles in, you know, you hear it through the mind. I'm using the power of language and words to describe what I'd like you to do. But then you just go, okay, I will do this. And so it's initially an intention, and then we just do it to see what happens. So we're not repeating over and over again, breathing in, experiencing joy, breathing out, experiencing joy. We don't repeat that. We simply set the intention and do it. There can be on a very subtle level, but most people use thought to describe an intention. So, on a subtle level, if you go to lift your arm, you intend to lift the arm. The intention is not necessarily a thought. If you look very carefully, there is a movement of the mind and the movement of the body. Yes. Yes, she said the most accessible form of joy is gratitude for my body. If you have difficulty cultivating joy, gratitude practice is a beautiful practice. And just the simple things for which we are grateful for, gratitude for being here together, gratitude for being alive, gratitude for our health, if we're blessed with health. Gratitude for friendship. Gratitude for kindness. Gratitude for the teachings. So we can go on and on. But just the simple things. Gratitude that the kitchen staff are cooking for us today. So there's wonderful ways that we can explore gratitude. And gratitude is very close to joy. And if you have difficulty with the joy and the practice of joy, just beginning with a little bit of gratitude can help you with the practice itself. let's go on to the next instruction. The next instruction involves breathing in, experiencing contentment or happiness. Could we have a translation? Could we have a translation for contentment, please? Okay. So in Pali, the word is sukha, and it's a very refined, it's a kind of refined kind of joy that I would call happiness. So we just set the intention without thinking about it too much and analyzing and getting caught in thought. We just set the intention, and then with the breath, we breathe in, experiencing contentment. We breathe out, experiencing contentment. So what did you discover? Through direct experience, was there any contentment evident? Anybody? Yes? Yes. Ah, yes. She said there's a feeling of stillness, like a full barrel that no wind can move. Wonderful. Wonderful. So we can have this feeling of being unwavering, being immovable in the face of all experience. This is equanimity, and with this comes great contentment, because we're no longer tossed around by our thoughts and views and opinions and attitudes and the circumstances of life. We can be with life, with all of the movements of life, but with this knowing of a stillness within. It's to be known and experienced directly. And we can just touch into it. It isn't dependent upon what's happening externally. It's a deep stillness that we can come to. And with it comes a wonderful sense of contentment and peace. True? Yes. Yes. So, yes. Yes. Ah, she couldn't feel it, so she gave up. Then the feeling came. Yes. Ah, okay. So, whenever we want, whenever there's wanting mind, we're caught. We're in trouble. So when we just give up, in a sense, when we just surrender to the situation, suddenly there's contentment. Then the I thought comes again. The sense of self lands in the world of thought and says, I want it deeper. So we measure our experience and we say, oh, I want more. I want it to be different. It's not quite good enough. Contentment is wonderful. Just be with it. You understood then how to be with it. It's to let go into it. It's not to try so hard to find it. And when we give up trying so hard to find it, or when we give up demanding how our experience ought to be, it simply is. The contentment is there. So wonderful. Fantastic. So right there, you heard extraordinary wisdom about how to be with life and to know contentment. It's not to be bound by one's desires and wants. So when we're really steady with our wanting mind, when we just see it for what it is, oh, there I go, wanting it to be deeper or different. When we just see that, we go, oh, we can let go. Yes. Thinking about people that you love? Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Is it okay to think about feeling people that I love and feel contented? Yes, it is. Of course it is. This is a very easy and direct way to know freedom of heart. It's beautiful. It's the practice of metta. It's the practice of love. And the love comes with a sense of contentment. So sometimes if we just bring to mind somebody we really love, there's the immediacy of our open heart. Yes. Yes. Give up the fighting with it. So we have to give up the fight, the struggle. So we rest into contentment. We let go into it. We come to it when we feel love. So the attitude of kindness and love and care and friendliness as we practice is essential. So mindfulness and attention needs to come with extraordinary love. It's necessary because it's the love and the care and the friendliness that opens out consciousness. And this is how we'll know contentment. This is how we'll know a deep joy. This is how we'll know fulfillment. And it isn't as difficult as you might think. You've heard around the room, we just pay attention. We're friendly to ourselves as we pay attention. We pay attention with kindness, with care. And then when we do that, we can touch into the heart of freedom. We can touch into extraordinary wisdom. The wisdom and the freedom is accessible for each of us, and we need to learn how to come to it. And these instructions of the Buddhas are extraordinary. They are gold. They have the capacity to transform your life from suffering and difficulty to freedom of heart, contentment and joy. And the path, the Dharma path, I think this retreat's called the Wisdom of the Way. The Dharma path is a path to liberation and freedom. It's a training of the mind to joy, contentment and peace, because we all know suffering. Every single person here in this room understands suffering. Here in Israel, you know it through and through. More than anywhere else I have ever been, I tell you. You absolutely know the pain and the sorrow, the history and so on, the current difficulties. What we need to really deeply know is the transformation of that suffering, how in the midst of the totality of everything, how can we find joy? How can we know a fulfilling life? How can we live amid all of this with extraordinary freedom of heart? And these are the teachings of liberation. And it's wonderful. We can just let go into this knowing of how to be with life, which is extraordinary. It, once we see it, it changes everything. So together, we will endeavor over these 3 days that we have to really see and know freedom of heart, even for a few minutes, even for a few moments. And some of you, of course, will have deeper experiences than others, but each experience is precious. We can learn and know our wisdom from our most difficult experiences. And even amid our most difficult and painful experiences, there can still be moments of joy. There can still be moments of contentment when we're really with the experience directly. So this is our practice. It's to be with life without grasping and gripping and holding on to it. It's to be with life without being caught up in desire, wanting it to be different, wanting my life to be different, wanting my meditation to be different. When we just let go, we see, oh, there's a way of being where there's ease, where there's joy, where there's contentment and freedom. So let's just, for a couple of minutes, just sit together, taking up one of those instructions. So, when I ask you to do that, don't do 30 seconds of joy, 30 seconds of contentment, and 30 seconds of what we did yesterday. Clear, you're working with joy or you're working with contentment. So breathing in, experiencing joy or contentment, breathing out, experiencing joy or contentment. So those of you who are familiar with the Anapanasati Sutta, the Sutta on Mindfulness with Breathing, from which I'm taking these directions, will know that in this section on mindfulness of feelings, or Vedana, there are two more instructions, which we won't do today, but I'll just let you know what they are, and I'll put a copy on the notice board. They are breathing in, experiencing the mental formation. So breathing in, experiencing a thought. Each thought has associated with it the feeling tone of the experience, pleasant, unpleasant, or in between. And then the fourth instruction in this section is to breathe in, calming the thought world. So with the breath in and the breath out, we're using the breath to calm the world of thoughts. So there's another instruction that you can take up if you wish. But for today, for most of you, especially if you're new to meditation, please just take up the joy or the contentment. That's enough. It's a great start. And if we really, really work with one of these instructions and kind of see it through to the end, it will actually show us all we need to know. It's an amazing and extraordinary kind of process. We take up the instruction and then we rather patiently work with it, and then we reflect on the insight and understanding that comes from the experience. And if we can access contentment, it tells us that we can live life with contentment. If we can access joy amid even the deepest sorrow, it means that there's a way of living that isn't filled with suffering altogether. It means that there's a breakthrough and the possibility of extraordinary joy. And I'm telling you that utterly is. We can live with an extraordinary amount of joy. Joy is the expression of the awakened heart-mind, but it's also to be cultivated in order to live an awakened life, an intelligent life, a life that's full of a response to life that's wise and deep. So joy is, it softens our sorrow, it softens our difficulty, and it's a very potent practice. So there's great encouragement from me to explore the cultivation of joy and, of course, deep contentment. So I wish you well with that exploration. Thank you very much for listening to the instructions this morning and for participating, for your responses, because we really learn from one another. It's precious to hear the direct experience. Now, I have a number of announcements to make. I have my list. Okay. Walking meditation can be done in rooms 3 and 4 if it's too hot outside. If you need a cool room to practice walking meditation, those rooms are available. Building 3 and 4. Thank you.